Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million...
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world, and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million.
Well, hello, Fake Stacks and Jacks. A little late this morning due to flooded expressways. So much for Chicago being the history of water management. They didn't do a very good job this morning on the expressways. Water all over the place. Do we have Mr. Flanagan?
We're still waiting on him right now.
I'm not hearing my own feedback here either. Anyway, the market, we have S&P futures up 13, NASDAQ futures up 69. Tesla is up $18. As Elon Musk, this is, man, I don't know what exactly to call it other than, as Bob Golden used to say, bizarro world. We have issues with China. We're trying to get rid of this, what's the one they want to get, they want them to divest? What's the, TikTok, right?
Yeah, that's the one.
Big, huge issue with that. And now Elon Musk goes over to China and claims that his last hurdle to roll out the full self-driving in China, now the stock's up 10%. Can anybody make any sense of this? I sure as hell can't. Mm. Anyway, John's supposed to be calling in, or was. He might have thought we weren't going to be in. And Kevin's going to call in at 7 to talk about the draft and some Bears draft history and whatever else comes up. But I'm kind of stunned about this. If anybody can figure out where this all is going to end between China, whether they're an enemy, whether they're a partner, whether they're not. Now, everybody's sniveling on this end about what's everybody going to do without TikTok. I mean, who gives a crap? I mean, I shouldn't say that because I don't use it, and a lot of people evidently do. But Kevin, how are you? I'm not hearing you. Man, I'm still
I'm
not
here, Tom.
Oh, you're Jan. You're here. All right. What? I'm trying to make head or tail.
To be short, because the buses are as screwed up as the expressways today.
So. I know. We'll just get a couple of. Can you make head or tail out of this China situation? Our relationship with that place?
Nobody will talk straight about it, Tom, at least in politics, because they are all pretty much towing the line on whatever private deals they've made, or family members, or whatever. So all you get really is smoke and mirrors. I think they've really made inroads in the messaging for what they want people to know about them, and that's one of the reasons I think it's so scrambled, because you got people who maybe aren't deeply connected to them that tend to speak a little more truth, and other people who are trying to save their own posteriors.
Well, Jan, we've been, God, however long we've been doing the show, and before that, China's been a topic, right, obviously, and I'm going to say if you were to pull out a show from 12, 13, 14 years ago, you would have heard me say something, I think somewhat cogent, but maybe useless. Put my behind in the Oval Office, and you're going to see back when Bill Gates was running Microsoft, him running the office and saying, Mr. President, these guys, they bought four things of software, and they bought, 150 million computers. And oh, by the way, all of them seem to have my software on there. They've stolen everything. And all of a sudden, you and I are going to go in the Oval Office. Man, that's horrible. Now what do we do? We got to do something with these guys. So you leave, and all of a sudden, the head of Pepsi comes in. I don't know if they still own Kentucky Fried, and obviously they still own Pepsi. What are you doing? What are you talking about? We're talking about a billion people drinking a Pepsi every day. And by the way, there's more pictures of the Colonel over there than there are a mile. What's the matter with you? Everything's fine. But it's been one of the most difficult political things for anybody to handle, even if the people were competent and actually wanted to handle it. I mean, it was all go, or we do whatever you want. There's mass investments over there. There's people, you know, I don't know, I'm not include BlackRock because I don't really know their balance sheet, yet I have heard the guy over many different years say, oh, we love these China investments, trying to get you to invest over there. And so, I don't know whether people ever did or how much they really pushed it. You know, I don't know. So I don't want the guy going to hell on what I have observed from the dude, but something it is the most complicated. We had a guy on the show, God, Matty will remember the name. He was from West Chicago, and he made coatings for pots and pans. Don't call it Teflon. Very insulted, because they haven't used Teflon in, what, 30 years or something. And he said all my customers moved to China. How the hell am I going to coat pots and pans here if they're making them all in China? I got to coat them there. And he was not the happiest guy on the bus having to move all, but the amount of investment is staggering. Now all of a sudden, which we probably should realize from day one, maybe they're not our friend. Matter of fact, maybe way worse than that. They're probably the only country in the world that is actually gearing up to fight us. Everybody else is gearing up to fight other people. And all of a sudden now we're with this conundrum. And I'm not so sure really what you do about it, to be honest with you.
Well, you know, the Chinese message is pretty scrambled too, Tom. I mean, Xi Jinping was in San Francisco, 6 months ago or so, you know, courting American investment because they need it desperately. But then you have Anthony Blinken going to China last week and being snubbed, you know, by all accounts, and then coming back and saying, you know, China is, you know, involved in election interference. I mean, neither one of these people, I think, have their story straight, whether it's the people in power in China or the people in power here. And I think that it's all teetering now on an economic, you know, point that's really, you know, going to take both countries down if they're not careful. So I can see in some ways why everything is so confused, because, you know, China can't stand us, but they need us desperately, and we can't stand China, but we need them desperately too.
Well, but the people here, when you say we, everybody still buys all their stuff, and by the way, people still invest over there. So I think they're driving a wedge through the investment part of capitalism, the part that says the capitalists will sell me the rope with which I'm going to hang him with. That mean they are very attuned to that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they obviously, I mean, do you think Elon Musk gives a rat's behind about the U.S.? If he can sell those cars, he's like somebody who would sell stuff that, I mean, who is it, Kennedy's dad?
How many other CEOs, Tom?
Well, I mean, we're talking about Kennedy's dad and Lindbergh and all these other guys. What are you talking about? The Nazis are a great market.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's all business. My only responsibility is to the bottom line. You know, I don't care. I mean, I've been threatening this for 15 years. I'm actually going to do it, John. The page in Sovereign State of ITT, or what was the guy's name? Harold Janine. He had a mental dialogue for like a page talking about these corporations. They should really be running the world. They're all smart guys like Bezos and Zuckerberg and all those guys. We should be running the world. We have to deal with these petty, you know, fiefdoms that people actually think they run the world, like the President of the United States and the Prime Minister of England. They actually think they're in our way. I mean, the China realizes that Tesla is not going to listen to Biden or Trump or anybody saying about China, hey, if I can make a buck over there, I'm going over there. What's the problem? And, you know, but we start selling those people stuff that they're using maybe to point at us. You know what? You know, I always think, Jan, is that Carl can be a little harsh about some of this stuff. You know, the man's not wrong. Unless you say,
oh, no.
Unless you say, you, Mr. S, Mr. Head of this corporation, are actually going to jail, I mean, for some of this stuff, nobody seems to care. I mean, it's stunning. I mean, I don't want to be the guy to do that, you know, but you know, it's one of those things. I don't want to clean up Chicago, but I know it has to be cleaned up. I don't want to be throwing people in jail. But I know it has to happen. I mean, is that fair? I mean, is it or not? What can I say?
If people could do their jobs, you know, especially the jobs they were elected to, things would be, I guess, easier. But I really find that the political divisions in this country, Tom, are all so enmeshed with China and other so-called enemies, or so-called allies, that the money trumps everything these days, and you can't really expect any kind of honesty or retribution for wrongdoing or investigation of wrongdoing or anything while the money is got its stranglehold on everything. So I just, the only way, when money starts to lose its importance, and that's going to be no fun for anybody when nobody has any money.
Yeah.
Then it may shake out, and you might have a somewhat saner, vision of what's going on. But right now, it's too screwed up. There's too many liars in public places, to quote a poet, and people who are looking after their own pocketbooks and nobody else's.
If you're trying to run for office, Jan, right now, there's no logic, there's no middle ground, there's no common sense. If you were to write what you would hope somebody was capable of doing, neither one of these guys I don't think is. I mean, if it was me running and I wanted to get my message out, okay, I would be, I'll use two people that were amazingly popular to people. One of them we didn't necessarily like. Matter of fact, we didn't hide at all. He was a madman.
Hey, Tom, I do have to run. My bus is coming.
All right, go, bud. We'll talk at you on our regular time. All right, buddy, you take care. SP Futures up 12, Nasdaq Futures up 70. Hopefully Kevin will call in and we'll finish this and then talk about Bear drafts. And I don't want to be doggy downer, but boy, the Bears have had some draft history that's a little bizarre. Anyway, yeah, this is I point to the picture of Elliot Spitzer in my industry. People, you raise that name up and people have, interesting views about the man. But all the years, my first, 10 years on the trading floor, before the OEX started, I mean, and even a little bit after, most of the people just traded in equity crowds. We had three or four stocks. I mean, if you're IBM, you only had IBM. So there were Kodak. I think that might have been the only one there. It might have been two. But every crowd had its personality. And every crowd had, for those that don't remember or ever even knew, at one point, almost 60%, maybe 55% of the stocks traded on the New York Stock Exchange were orders that came from the CBOE or the Amex or the Pecost options floor. And you say, well, why the hell is that? Well, if somebody came in and I'm trading, Eastman Kodak, stocks trading 32, they only had strikes every 5 hours in those days. So say the stock's trading 34.5, you come in and buy 100 lot of the 35 calls from me. All right, well, the delta meaning the change in price of the stock, of the option, of a particular option, given a dollar movement in the stock, how much is the option going to move? Well, given even a 1 cent move in the stock, how much is the option going to move? Well, if you're right at the strike, it's about 50%, 45-50. So you say that's a 50 delta. Okay, so for me to be neutral, if I'm a market maker, I'm not just going to take the other side of your trade. I'm not an insurance company. I'm not bigger than Goldman Sachs. So the first thing I do, if I don't have any opinion on a stock, is I'm going to go buy 4,500 or 5,000 shares of Kodak on the New York Stock Exchange floor. And if the next guy comes in and sells me the same 100 lot and I make an eighth on it or something, I turn around and I sell those shares right back out. Okay, hopefully I scratch them. Meaning I sell them for the same price, or who knows, maybe I could even make an eighth, but that rarely happened. So all of a sudden, I just traded 10,000 shares just because of the two people doing the 100 lots. But there were specialists in New York, and everybody knew the specialist rules. There were guys that were really pretty good, and there were guys that were absolute thieves. I mean, they broke every rule. I mean, if there was a rule, they broke it. Because, I mean, he may say IBM is 120 to an eighth, 100 up, meaning 10,000 shares. Okay, I go buy 5,000 at an eighth, and all of a sudden, eighth a quarter. The specialist takes it out before I get in, because I'm a professional. He trades ahead of me. You sit there and go, wait a minute, what the hell is that all about? He hopes I pay a quarter, and he scalps an eighth on me. All right, so there were guys that everything was two up or one up when you know there's stuff there, and they don't tell you what the size is. There were guys that did every conceivable thing to screw with the markets, and of course New York Stock Exchange, because these guys are in like a tick on a dog, never went after these guys. Never went after them. And the SEC was considered, New York South. They were totally intimidated by the firms that were the specialists. So all of a sudden, Elliot Spitzer piles in from the outside. And I forget what his job was at the time. He was New York attorney or what he was. He goes after the bad specialist. And I don't know what the mentality is, man, from a younger guy, you tell me. Everybody doesn't like the fact that people buzz by you at 75 miles an hour or 80.
That's right, yeah.
If tomorrow 15, you can barely hear you. You got to kick up the feedback on both the mics.
Better now?
Yeah, better now. There's a little dial over there. The lever doesn't work or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But if all of a sudden tomorrow 50 squads show up and everybody going over 85 is pulled over on the side of the road and their car is impounded, you don't like that either.
No.
So what do we like? You know, we don't like people screwing around with the law, yet if somebody comes in and actually tries to enforce it, we don't like that either. I'm not sure why. I mean, in the CBOE, guys, they hated Spitzer because he actually enforced the laws they were pissed about. Yet they couldn't stand the guy because he actually invaded somebody else's space or something.
We like when other people get in trouble. We don't like when we get in trouble.
But, I mean, they weren't – he never came after the guy putting the orders in. It was like, who's this guy? What's he doing? We don't like him either. I mean, it's the weirdest damn thing. I mean, if somebody were to actually someday walk into some medical place and haul the board out in cuffs and put and fine everybody of a board member because they're charging way too much or they did what the Sherman Act says, nobody'd want that. And yet, why? I mean, you get screwed every day every time you buy something. Kevin, you with us?
Good morning.
How are you? Yeah, John had to go early too. The whole world was flooded this morning.
Why? What, Tom? You're in charge of that.
Maybe Matt would get there. What's the word? It was a rainy night in Georgia. I believe it's raining all over the world.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was. Here's bizarre. Some guy almost waxed me on the way in. All they're talking about is standing water in the right lane in Hubbard's Cave, right? So, of course, when you get near Hubbard's Cave, you know, everybody's trying to move over to the left. There's a big spot for me to move over to the left. I go to move over to the left. All of a sudden, this guy is honking at me. He's trying to move over to the right to get to the puddle. where are you going, you idiot? That's the lane everybody wants to be out of.
Racing to a puddle.
Hey, he's racing to the puddle. I'm like, oh, God. Anyway, Kevin, we're talking about this China situation with Tesla up 10% because now they're going to do this massive business in China. Is there any what is the mental problem with collective people, not individual, but what's going on? Just tell me.
What is the problem with people? That's a pretty broad.
Yeah, that's a pretty broad.
That's at least half a show.
Well, are we hoping it's not going to work and he knocks off a million Chinese with a self-driving car? What are we hoping here?
We can hope for that.
I don't have any problem with the regular Chinese people, do you? I don't really want to see them get whacked by.
No, and honestly, I get that companies want to sell in the market. Whatever the product may be, that companies want to sell in the market. The question is, what are they willing to compromise to do so? So how close to the Chinese Communist Party are they willing to get? How much of their bidding are they willing to do? And that's where I get, you know, the more I see that, that's where I get problems. That's why I get big problems with Coca-Cola or Procter & Gamble, companies like that being official sponsors of the Beijing Olympics. Because that Olympics was intended to be a showcase for the Chinese Communist Party and their way of doing things. So if that's what we're going to do, if we're going to sponsor that, I got a problem with that. If you just want to sell Coca-Cola to Chinese people and set up distributorships, I do get that. It's too big a market to ignore.
I'm going to lob one out there, and I don't know the man, so I probably shouldn't, but I'm going to anyway. But this is based on my views of Elon Musk regarding the thing he did where he's going to buy the stock in, then he didn't, and it caused the stock to go up and down, and the SEC was pretty much all over him, late, of course. But the fact is, his attitude toward the SEC, and you know, you like him or lump him, but the fact is, there are some somewhat rules in investing and throwing around information that's either is going to move the market without telling people or doing something, or maybe you front run it, maybe you didn't, or maybe you don't even care or whatever. But either way, it's not proper. I mean, and the man's attitude towards the SEC was, you chumps, I'm Elon Musk. I'm above all you idiots, meaning us and everybody else. And I think that's the same attitude he has with China. Do you think he cares? I mean, in my opinion, the man, in regards to that, he's the new Harold Janine. He's amoral compared to when it comes to countries and whatever. He thinks he's a citizen of the world. A lot of those guys do. What are you talking about? If I make money in China and hurt you, so what? Screw you. This is my opinion. I mean, I hope I'm wrong, but I don't.
Yeah, I'd like to think you that you are, but I don't. This is a big ethical question. I think that spans all kinds of industries, and I don't like the answers we're getting.
No, I don't either. Hey, so what about that draft?
What about it? Pretty good, huh?
I just want to talk about a second, and you know, this is where Matt Byrne. You know, he's one of these guys. He's one of these younger. You know, everything's online. Everybody's opinion means something online, kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see what happened to our guy from Notre Dame, Joe Alt, and his girlfriend? Did you hear the story? Is it Joe?
So what was going on? I know he was in Minnesota and not at the draft. So what was the
The deal is he didn't go to the draft. Okay, but he's going to be one of the first tackles picked. But evidently his dad a player or something? I don't know.
His dad played professionally. His dad was a very good professional football player.
So then somebody's got the big house and they have everybody over. And they got the camera there and everything, and he's got the girlfriend, seemed like a very nice girl. She's all dressed up, and they sit there, and all of a sudden the camera's on him, and he gets picked in the number 5 spot. And nothing happens. The girlfriend just kind of staring wide-eyed at the camera, and probably never had a camera before, and nothing happens. And he doesn't. So all of a sudden, the tweet hounds are, she's an idiot, basically, because... And he didn't care. He doesn't want to go to San Diego and blah, 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 blah. And this is now spinning, right? I don't know who managed to get their tweet out that quick, but evidently people are just all they do. The first tweet is the first tweet. It's like the guy in golf. Every time somebody hits the ball, he yells, it's in the hole type of thing.
Yeah, get in the hole, yeah.
Yeah. It turns out that wherever they live, their feed was like 8 or 10 seconds delayed. So
yeah,
he always says. Yeah, and he didn't know he'd been picked.
He did. It hadn't been announced.
It hadn't been announced.
And the phone call first.
Yeah, and the girlfriend is sitting there with kind of this deadpan look on her face. It wasn't like she didn't want him going to San Diego. She didn't hear it when everybody else heard it. But for the rest of her life, she's going to be the dopey girlfriend who didn't want him going to San Diego. I mean,
she's going to be the dopey girlfriend or the dopey wife of the guy who's making millions of dollars.
Well,
I don't think she gives a poop.
Oh, she probably doesn't, but I'm saying that's how quickly this stuff can happen. And for all the wrong reasons. You know, it's just, anyway. So now I was reading this morning, his first interview with his head coach didn't go well. What is all that about? I mean, the guy's a pretty good tackle. By the way, do these guys all leave school?
And he's a reasonably articulate guy, too. So, he's not a dummy. It sounds to me, I thought I saw that he's going to come back and in his off season finish up his engineering degree. So, he's not that's a pretty challenging engineering program. He's not a dummy if he's doing that program.
No, that's a serious program. All right, let's talk Bears draft. What'd you think? I got all kinds of history sitting in front of me.
Yeah, there isn't really much to not like. First of all, there just wasn't that much of it. In part because they made some deals that I thought were money well spent. For instance, a second-round pick for Montez Sweat, very good. They also lost a second-round pick that didn't work out with the wide receiver whose name's escaping me now.
Yeah.
And then they cut that loss, and didn't double down.
What was the guy who was hurt 2-3 years in a row? Was that the guy who was hurt 2-3 years ago? Or was that somebody else?
He was hurt. Right away when the Bears got him, but it was, he didn't have the attitude. That's part of why Pittsburgh let him go, and part of why the Bears were so aggressive in bidding with him is the Packers were after him too at the trade deadline. So it's not like the Bears were out there bidding against themselves or anything like that and being really foolish.
Oh, the kid from Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Yeah.
and I'm just blanking on his name, and I'd like to forget him.
Yeah.
So you had that. You had a second round pick that that went for, you know, a Pro Bowl caliber wide receiver. So you can't really complain about the hand, you know, the mere handful of picks that they have, that they were a couple short, because they got really good value for them. And in Sweat's case, not only did they get him, but then they got him signed up for a long-term contract.
Can you name, Greg just wandered in, they talked today about the last time, or they were talking about the last time the Bears had the number one overall pick. I really can't believe this. You don't remember when that was? Well, you don't remember because you weren't here, neither was I.
So when was it?
1947.
1947, and who did they take?
They drafted a guy, a halfback by the name of Bob Fenimore.
Oh, the great Bob Fenimore.
He played 10 games, carried the ball 53 times, and that was it.
That was it.
And the next 2 years...
Tom Harmon worked out okay, though, didn't he?
Tom Harmon was a halfback. He was 46, I believe. No, Johnny Lujack was 46, who I don't...
Did Tom Harmon play for the Bears? I don't think so.
I don't know if he was the... No, he was the number one pick in...
It's Mark Harmon's father, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, he's here. He's here one of these years. 1941, Tom Harmon, and I don't know how long he played for the Bears, if at all, but he was drafted number one in 1940. You know, he probably went in the Army, I would think, didn't he?
He went to the AFL, or the All-American Football. Yeah.
You know who else did that? And was never really drafted by a big Notre Dame star. I mean, he was a Heisman Trophy winner and all.
Did they both win the Heisman?
No, I was talking about both, one of the guys here Harmans? From Chicago. That no, the guy was on TV. No, he played for UCLA, but he didn't win a Heisman.
Okay,
he was a starting quarterback at UCLA though, Mark. I think.
Yes, he was. Started a Rose Bowl.
And well, the guy that I actually knew, I won't say well, but I spent a few evenings with him after the Notre Dame dinners. Tom Tully was big friends of the guy who our buddy Jim Doherty works with. Tom Tully's a He was a former assessor, and he's a big-time attorney in Chicago, and a terrific guy. You know all these guys. So we'd go to these things. We'd go out after drinking. We'd go out for an adult beverage and with George Conner and Ziggy Zarapsi and that whole group. And George, a very nice man. Where did he go? Is he... where did he go? Was he Mount Carmel? He was someplace around here. But George was a guy. Matter of fact, Jack Brickhouse was a pretty decent human being. Some guy at WGN was bemoaning the fact that his wife had a baby. Not bemoaning the fact she had a baby. Evidently, the baby was preemie. And he was only like 4 or 5 pounds, and his baby's going to die, and he's never going to do this or anything. So Jack says, "What do you got going tonight?" He says, "Well, I got to go home. Tell the wife you're not coming home tonight. We're going to a bar." Oh, okay. So all of a sudden, there's this big guy sitting next to him. Jack says, "You see who this guy is?" And he goes, "Well, yeah, man, you're like George Conner." George was evidently 3 pounds at birth. They thought for sure he was going to die. And he didn't, obviously. Well, he got drafted. Where was Holy Cross? Where's Holy Cross, Kevin?
It's in Massachusetts.
Well, he went to Holy Cross for 2 years, played ball there, got drafted by some team in an American conference, all right, and said, "Screw it, my dad's sick in Chicago. I'm going to go play in South Bend where I come home, you know, every Sunday to see the man." So he played 2 years in Notre Dame, was all you know, everything, Heisman Trophy, Hall, you name it. And he didn't re-enter the draft. The Bears never had to draft him. The Bears just paid $13,000 a year. He outbid everybody. I mean, $13,000 in 1946 was alignment for alignment, or 48. Then he came out. He was Heisman Trophy winner, I believe, in 48, and then the Bears just signed him. So evidently, somehow or another, the Bears just essentially said, "Screw you," to the draft pick to the other guys, and they signed him. But anyway, in 1940, I know... We're talking about drafted quarterbacks. They drafted in 1948 a Hall of Famer, Bobby Lane. Of course, Bobby Lane, did he ever pay? Now, Sid Luckman was there, so they had a real quarterback. But he went on and had a huge career in Detroit. I wonder what they got for him, Kevin.
Not much.
Probably not much. And the next year, and get a load of this, in the 12th round, another Hall of Famer, they drafted George Blanda. George Blanda played till 1975.
Oh, yeah, George Blanda played when he was 50.
Yeah, well, he was still a kicker, right?
He was still a kicker, and he was still the backup quarterback, so he could come in and run a few plays. Where I don't think you wanted him to, you know, start three games in a row, but he played behind Daryl LaMonica in Oakland.
The Mad Bomber. And evidently he wanted to throw the ball too much, so Halas didn't like him, so he couldn't wait to get rid of him. So 2 years in a row, they draft Hall of Fame quarterbacks, and neither one of them did anything for the Bears. And then the last time they had a number one pick, the guy was a bust. So let's just hope the luck has changed for this guy. Just saying.
Well, I suspect it has. I've listened over the last week to quite a few Caleb Williams interviews, and I got to say my impression of him has been dramatically upgraded. He's pretty measured. Obviously, he's very aggressive in his goals, and he believes he's going to be really good. In fact, when they drafted the punter, he texted the punter and said, "You're not going to get to kick very much."
From my South Side roots, he's a little too out there. Do something first, will you? For God's sake.
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah, I get that's off-putting to a lot of people. But I don't read that like I did when he was at USC. And I'm going to tell you, it's going to take me a little while to get over that whole USC thing because, just so that the listeners understand my bias against USC, it's more than the rivalry. My first memory of Notre Dame football is when I was 10 years old. And Ara Parseghian got hired, and he came in and he turned things around right away for Notre Dame. The program had been down, and they won their first 9 games. He moved John Hewitt, into the quarterback spot. Hewitt wound up winning the Heisman Trophy, and everything was great, but they went out to Los Angeles and lost to USC. Now, I wasn't paying any attention because I was only 10 years old, but I do remember after the game my mother crying, and I have not forgiven those evil bastards for making my mother.
I don't blame you. The when Eric came in, this is how screwy things were at the time. The Irish had never hired a quarterback from outside the system, outside the family, right?
All the guys. You mean coach?
A coach, yeah, coach from outside the family. And Era was a he started at Miami, Ohio, right? I believe so.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Then he went to Northwestern.
Yeah.
And he beat Notre Dame. What, one or was it two or three years?
A couple times.
And he thought the Irish actually had a pretty good team, and he had no business beating them, basically. And he went. He actually went to Hesburgh, and he said, "If I came, I'd like to come coach here. You guys have a way better team than you're showing. And by the way, you need some new blood." And it took the who's what's his name, the athletic director? Moose Kraus?
Moose was the athletic director, and at the time, Joe Kuharik had been the coach. He left to coach the Philadelphia Eagles. Huey DeVore signed on for 1 year as an interim. He had been the freshman football coach. In fact, Huey was the head coach twice. He was the interim head coach when Frank Leahy when it was in the military, and then he was the interim head coach again as the bridge to Ara Parseghian.
And then, I think Moose Kraus finally sold it to Ted Hesburgh, right? And they hired him. Era.
And they got a legendary coach. He was a terrific coach.
But he went to them. He said, "You guys got a way better team than your show. What's the matter with you guys?" Basically, I mean, I don't think he was absolutely convinced that Huey DeVore was the world's best head coach. Is that a fair statement?
Oh no, they were not. That was never intended to be a long term thing with Huey. It was strictly a we don't have a lot of notice here. Can you step up and do it? And of course, yeah, he would do it. Huey was an All American football player at Notre Dame and a pretty good head coach at St. Bonaventure. So it's not like he had never done the job before.
Plus, he's a dad to one of our best friends.
And he's a dad of one of my college roommates, Tommy DeVore.
And it is an interesting...
And I can tell you great stories about sitting in the DeVore's kitchen just all night pounding down beers with Huey. And God help you if you're sitting closest to the refrigerator, because Huey's going to keep asking you to get up and go get him a beer out of the fridge.
Oh, God. Well, those guys are good at that. So we had five quarterbacks... taken in what, the first seven rounds or something? Something bizarre like that?
Yeah, let me see if I can pull that up.
I think it's
up.
6-12.
6-12?
I think so.
And what are the chances that the number one pick is the best one of the bunch? This, by the way, this is number 8 for the Bears in 25 years. Number 8 of their first round picks. That's pretty good.
Yeah, some of those were first round picks spent on trading for quarterbacks, like Rick Meyer and you remember his name, the guy from.
Why do I always forget the guy's name from Denver? Who's that guy, Greg? He was actually pretty good, but he was on his back most of the time with the Bears.
Smoking yeah. Jay.
It was
Jay Cutler.
Yeah, Jay Cutler.
Yeah, and Cutler, he was a very good quarterback when he was standing. He wasn't very good when he was flat on his back looking up at the sky, which was often.
Yes.
There was, leave it to the Bears to go spend 2 first-round draft picks on a quarterback, and then don't draft any lineman anywhere along the way. Don't build an offensive line for the guy. That's one of the things that they've done a somewhat better job of, right now. I think the offensive line still could use one more real star, but they've filled it in. You and I were talking yesterday. They brought a lot of experienced pros into by a lot I mean like 4. Experienced pros into the onto the roster in the off season. Nobody who you look and say, "Oh, that guy's going to the Pro Bowl," but at least guys who can come in and play competently, and especially for depth, so that if your young guys get hurt again, someone like
Jenkins or somebody gets hurt all the time.
Yeah, someone like Tevin Jenkins, who's been hurt a couple times as it is. That he's a really good player, but he's got a history of injuries. Well, if that's the case, then you probably better have it covered. And so they've done a better job of that. I would have been fine if they would have spent that number 9 pick on a tackle, but I'm just as fine with them picking it, spending it on Odunze.
Well, if you lose one of these high end offensive linemen, it takes really a while to recover. I mean, I think the Bears. Maybe a couple of years ago, finally, they really got whacked when Howie Long's kid only played a few years, because he had a 10-year All-Pro destined on his forehead,
yeah,
and he did, when he got rolled up by his own guy and he had some huge ankle surgery and never was, but he was as good a guard as I've seen in a long time, and all of a sudden he got, then they moved him to tackle after he got hurt. He wasn't mobile enough to do that. It just ended up being a bleep storm for the guy. But you lose somebody like that early on, you just, they're hard to replace. I mean, they're the top of the gene pool. And you need one guy like that on every line, because then all of a sudden the numbers become difficult. But, Kevin, we're not, my uncles were really into football. My one uncle played 12-year pro ball in during the Depression in one of the junior leagues. I think he played for the West Side All-Stars or somebody in Chicago, and they would scrimmage the Bears in the preseason and so forth, but they were never NFL. But my his younger brother was goofy with the Bears too, and we'd go to games all the time when I was a kid. But he said, the Bears, because they have this incredible mentality, and this is George Halas, he said they never lost a star. He said they bought George Conner, they paid him so much money at $13,000 at the time. Other than the owners were spinning, like, what the hell is this guy doing paying that? He never lost Red Grange, he never lost Sid Luckman, he never lost anybody like that for money. But he also thought that the bottom end of the lineup were bags of balls. They were just anybody you could throw in there. Get hurt, so what, we get another guy. And my uncle said they used to play 12 games, way back, I don't remember that. And then they played 14 for a real long time. And then it went to 16, and he said, the game keeps changing. Every time you add a game or two, all of a sudden, the guys at the bottom of the depth chart become more and more important. And I don't think the league has really worked its way through yet these 17 games plus another playoff game. So we really have upped the challenge another 2 games, really, in the last 5 years, if you add the extra, the extra wild card and all that kind of stuff. So for some teams, you're up to 17, 18, 19, 21 games? Is that if you're coming through the wild card hole?
Yeah, it's completely a war of attrition.
Yeah.
You know, it really is. And, you know, you just hope everybody's going to have the injuries. You just hope that you don't get them at the spots that can make the biggest difference on your roster. So, yeah, you need the depth. And so now you have guys that are, you know, on your depth chart, and they're important. They're more important than ever before. But, you know, what would happen if the injury were Patrick Mahomes? You know,
yeah,
that's the guy you got to have healthy, and then you can do a lot from there.
Well, but you also have teams that, I mean, this thing with the quarterbacks is this craziness on quarterbacks right now, and you'll ask, especially a lot of young people. I mean, I'm not denigrating anybody, but now it appears is if you don't have an elite quarterback, you can't go anywhere, especially. Maybe now the league has gotten a little crazier with pass interference calls and things like that. But you can only really have an elite quarterback if your offensive line is good enough to get four people in the pattern. If you got to keep your tight end in the block, I don't care who you are, you're not going to be that good. But I guess my point is, it hasn't been that long where if you had all the other positions in place and a really good defense, as long as the quarterback wasn't a buffoon, you could win the Super Bowl. And now everybody's convinced. That, yeah,
tell it to Joe Flacco.
Yeah, I mean, now everybody's convinced that that's totally impossible, that all you need is a quarterback, and we're back to the other guys being a bunch of rum-dums. Well, I'm not going to go that far, but Philadelphia is a perfect example. I mean, Philadelphia had probably the best offensive line of football, and what their left tackle was out, five or six, last year, Kevin, he's out five or six games. And unbeknownst to them, I mean, I was just watching, you know, it was a second game on a Sunday, so I'm watching it, and the announcer goes, you know, left tackle's back. When he's there, they were like 9-1. When he wasn't, they're like 0-4. You know, and they had the routine where the quarterback sneaked. They never got stopped. You know, they come and push the guy behind, which I think is kind of weird. And so one guy asked the color guy. He says, "How come every team doesn't do that?" Because they don't have Kelce as a center. he makes that go. And the guy's a beast. Well, now he retired. Now, if the left tackle gets hurt again, you know, the center, you're going to see a whole different Philadelphia offense because you don't have those two guys that are the top of the gene pool. And I don't know how you replace Kelce as a center. Maybe the kid from Iowa a few years ago, maybe. But how many centers are around that are like that in our lifetime? 5, 10?
Not that many. And so, yeah, and it, so it becomes, you know, the question is, can you survive a few games with a star player getting injured? And because you can get backups that will, you know, where you may not win everything, you're certainly not going to be as good as you were, but you can get backups where you still have a good chance to win. And that includes at quarterback.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you're just putting in a guy, you know, who really has no business being there, that's a different issue.
Well, if you think your team is good enough to be playoff bound, and to go deep in the playoffs, it's really hard for you salary cap wise to pay up for a second string quarterback to where if your first guy goes out, you got a good chance of winning. I mean, it's really hard to do. It just is. The sport is. Well, look at what's going on with basketball. I mean, basketball is even more of a. I mean, I don't know if they're going to win because I'm not so sure he's still really 100%, even though he scored 50 points the other night. Then the Knicks came in second. Philadelphia barely made it because Embiid was out for 3 months. They're more than a match for New York with Embiid back in there. Who's this kid in New York that is all world, this lefty?
Jalen Brunson's been good for a while.
But he wasn't that good on the Mavericks. He wasn't 20-some points a game, and the kid's all world. He was okay. I mean, he was...
But he's been very good. I think he was a second-round pick. Which is unusual, but there are.
You know what? He might have been. He was a late second round.
Brunson's background is this: first of all, he went to Stevenson High School up in Lincolnshire, so he's a Chicago area kid. He was the point guard for two national championship teams at Villanova.
I think he won. He was Illinois Mr. Basketball. I think he's the academic All American. A good kid.
Yeah.
But then he goes to Dallas and was kind of just okay. And I'm looking, who is this guy? And I started reading this Wikipedia. I know that guy. Remember him from Illinois, from being here. But all of a sudden, he's like, you know, wow. I mean, he's something.
Yeah, well, he is. You know, there's a lot to be said for guys who see the court, you know, who see the whole damn court and see it better. And you know, as the Wayne Gretzky adage was, see what's going to happen before anybody else.
Well, that is sort of the truth. I mean, the kid that the Hawks have, that new center, I think is sort of like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, Kevin, thank you very much. We should have Audrey after the break. Talk about some real estate. SP Futures up 10.75. I do wish the Bears some luck, although I'll tell you what, I'm the governor has basically said no about 8 times at his new stadium. I mean, how many times I got to ask him? And we don't. He goes, it's not a priority. It can't be a priority for a team that's making $200 million a year, paying $6 million in rent to make more money. Who's that a priority for?
They're going to wind up out in Arlington Heights.
It's okay. Let them go.
Yeah, I think it's fine.
I'm not. You know what? They don't want any part of that deal either. Because they didn't get enough, what they wanted out there.
The Arlington Heights mayor said they were happy to be a Plan B.
Well,
yeah, so we're waiting. Just come about on, to be knock Plan on our A door again. Whenever you're ready, come on, and knock on our door.
Yeah. Why did they?
They'll probably arrange something on the taxes that isn't what the Bears want, but is some kind of relief. But the big thing for the Bears is they're going to be able to monetize that property year round,
and they should do that. Why?
They should do that. Why?
Yeah.
Because it's a good business decision for them.
Well, Kevin, it would be a good business decision for us for them to give us a big chunk of the lakefront. We'll build something and we get to... Nobody else gets to do that.
Well, I get that. And, you know, I'd feel a whole lot better about the idea of building on the lakefront if they were going to pay a fair market value for the stadium rent, but they won't.
And they want a piece... They're thinking about half the money... only if the state borrows it for them. And by the way, they want the profit for everything that goes on there, for coming up with half. I love that deal.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, I think that was a non-starter.
I don't blame them for asking, but no. That doesn't mean they're going to get it.
Anyway, Kevin, thank you. SP Futures up 11, Nasdaq's up 62. Be right back.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief.
Well...
I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right now.
You know I love you, baby. I wouldn't leave you. It wasn't my fault. Honest. I ran out of gas. I had a flat tire. I didn't have enough money for cab fare. My tux didn't come back from the cleaners. An old friend came in from out of town. Someone stole my car. There was an earthquake. A terrible flood. Locust. It wasn't my fault, I swear to God!
A rainy night in Georgia. A rainy night in Georgia.
You two guys, you sounded like Belushi. There was a terrible flood.
There was. There really was a terrible flood. I actually went right through it.
Where? You in Hubbard's Cave?
About there, yeah. It was one of the tunnels.
Well, you know, you didn't listen to the radio. You didn't move over.
You know, yeah.
In the right lane, you were about a foot of water.
You know, actually, I saw the guy in front of me move out of the way, and I thought, what's he moving out of the way for? And before I know it, I'm in the puddle.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
The first couple guys that whacked into it, a big crash. They cleaned it off earlier.
Yikes.
Anyway, SP Futures up 10, NASDAQ Futures up 63. Big move was in Tesla, up $22 because they got the okay for full self-driving cars in China. Are you going to pay up $11 for that, Greg? Because that's the news, or what?
Sleeping on the way to work, that sounds great.
Yeah, God. DAX down 9 points, call that flat. FTSE up 29.4%. Kekron up 6, call that flat. So sleepy morning over there. Nikkei, however, up 306, it's 0.8%. Hang Seng up 95. 17,746, closer to 18 than 17 here. They're going to keep moving up, 0.5%. And finally, the Chinese attempt to prop these markets up with more money seems to be working. Shanghai up 24.8%. Well over 3,000 now at 3,113. On Friday, we had another up day, a big day in the NASDAQ. Dow was up 153, S&P up 51, NASDAQ up 316. So we ended up with a big up week last week for a change. Part of it is this, the U.S. 10-year down 4 basis points. We're down to 4.63. We were up to, 4.7 something last week? That has come back a little bit. The Bund down 4 basis points, 2.52. Japan unchanged, 0.89. Oil. Down 62 cents, 83.23. Brent down 77, 88.73. Natural gas unchanged, 193, but it's up from the. It down to 160, didn't it, Greg? We have Audrey coming on in a second. We can talk a little bit about this thing. RBOB unchanged, 276. Although, I found a station that was still 383 yesterday. Everybody else is 415, 419, up 20 cents in like a week. Gold down $1.90, 23.45. Silver up 2 cents, 27.56. Copper continues to go up, 4 cents, 460. Greg, you're my futures guy. Why didn't you just tell me to buy this crap at like 395 and just sit back? It just goes up every day. We've got the U.S. dollar, 107 against the euro, 125 against the pound, maybe a little weaker. And we've got Bitcoin down 1,634, big move there today, 62,121. Matt, a lot of stuff. What do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Rain, rain, rain.
Oh, lots of rain. Yeah, good morning. Currently 7:38 a.m. on April 29th, 2024. As far as weather, we're looking at 63 degrees today, a high of 76 this later in the day. Rain this morning and lots of it. Expect flooding on the roadways. Down in Phoenix, Arizona, 61 degrees this morning. Sunny skies with a high of 91 degrees. In the NBA playoffs yesterday, first round, game 4, Knicks beat 76ers. That was 97-92. Clippers took out Mavericks 116-111. Pacers take home a win against Bucks 126-113. And Timberwolves get a win as well against the Phoenix Suns. That's 122-116. The MLB, Cubs lost to Red Sox 5-4. And White Sox won against Rays 4-2. Finally, of the NHL playoffs, first round, game 4, Avalanches beat Jets, a brutal 5-1. Canucks took home a win against Predators, 4-3. Rangers won 4-2 against the Capitals, and the Oilers got themselves a nice win against the LA Kings, 1-0, 1-0. So I got Chief, back to you.
We have Odd?
We do indeed.
Yes, you do.
What's going on? I'm just reading this thing. I can't believe I just saw this. Who's this lady who is the Christy Noem, who is a vice presidential candidate? She comes out with some memoirs about how she had to kill a 14-year-old puppy or something. What is going on in this world?
Don't know. I'll have to read it because she's the governor of South Dakota, and she seems like a pretty great person. So I'd have to see what it's not more AI, fake news, whatever. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? Well, I think I'd leave that out of my memoirs if it was me. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I read the article. She just described basically the dog was a hunting dog, and it just it was temperamental, and so that's how she explained why she put it down.
Oh, God. Yeah. So, Ed, what's going on with the? I was just reading here. I mean, and you and Nance, you deal with this stuff all the time because you're dealing with people. If anybody really has their thumb on the pulse of America, it's people that, like Odd and Nancy, they actually talk about people's finances and housing and things like that. And there's a piece here in the CNBC this morning regarding the PCE number came out last week, and they talk about consumer wages were up 0.5%. If you saw this, Greg, consumer spending was up 0.8, and consumer savings were down 0.4. Because all this stuff, it has to add up, right? I mean, if you're spending it, you're not saving it, whatever. And I don't know how healthy that is. I mean, but what are you guys seeing? I mean, I say you guys, you and Nancy, you're still, a lot of what you're doing is in the group where people, they're not the one percenters, but they're cash buyers and sellers for various reasons, because they're people maybe own a home that are moving up or moving down in size. And there's a lot of that movement going on, more than like the regular movement you would see in most years. Is that still the case, or you get a lot of first-time people that actually have the money to buy a place and whatever?
Well, you are seeing, you know, a lot of people who have money for one reason or another, the stock market, previous purchases. People actually came from almost a mythological, better financial time earlier in their lives. But people have to live somewhere, and you know, bear in mind, you don't have to have that 20% down to buy. You could have conventional 3 or 5% down even to buy something. And for some people, by the time you rent something...
Bud, where'd you go?
Audrey?
Bud, lost her someplace.
She's somewhere.
Hope she wasn't taken out by the terrier poodle or the fierce poodle.
You just want to buy something because your monthly payment will still be less than your rent, most likely.
Mm. You know, why are the rents so high? I mean, everybody keeps talking about the Chicago area. The jobs aren't here, but they must be if people are paying the rent.
No, the problem is there's no place to live. There's no place to go to rent or buy. So people have to go somewhere. So it's the old supply and demand thing on rentals as well. And there's less rentals and more people fighting for them. So here we are.
Well, what about these big, huge places downtown that everybody dashed out of in COVID? Are they all full again?
I don't know. The one thing I do not have my finger on is the pulse of the downtown market. I don't know if they're full. You know, and people, you know, a lot of times downtown does gravitate towards your younger buyer, but I know from a friend, a daughter of a friend of mine, is that people are doubling up to be able to afford rent also. That's something that you did not used to see.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I think there is some of that going on. I just wonder, I never heard any of the details. Maybe Jan could dig it up. But remember the story about Lake Point Tower, Rod, how they tried to go condo for how many years? But it used to be, Greg, I don't know if you knew this or not, but you had to own the property to go condo, right, Rod?
Yeah.
And the Lake Point Tower was built actually on air rights over the Indiana Harbor Belt Railroad, because there was a railroad that went out to Navy Pier back when it was a pier, and actually there's railroad tracks under Lake Point Tower, so they were built on air rights. So they never could get a variance out of somebody to sell it, right, Ed? And then all of a sudden one year they did. The Galitas or somebody managed to weasel the thing went condo and was condo like forever. And then didn't they like 3-4 years ago decide to buy all the units back from everybody and then turn it back into a rental? I wonder how that worked out.
I think it's longer ago than that. I bet it's worked out pretty well for them.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I wonder what kind of price they gave everybody. And if the people turn around and just rent right where they were, maybe. That's kind of strange.
Well, probably give people maybe an option. You know, well, this is what we're doing and whatever. But I don't know. It's one thing I don't know. It's interesting. All the gyrations downtown are always interesting.
Well, you've been selling a few pieces of property. I mean, it's always interesting whenever you sell a real nice house. I mean, for everybody's, I never mess with Audrey's stuff. She's really good at what she does, and she doesn't need me screwing it up. So even if I drive her out to a place and she's showing somebody, I stay in the car and talk to Kevin or Jen and stay instead of the mess for fear I might be a goofball. Some of the places you sell, the one place we went, it was like $800,000, and I'm looking at it from the outside and I'm going, wow, I don't think you could put this place up for, in today's prices, for $1 million, $1 million, $2 million. And now you're selling pieces of property to people that are going to build. Are they talking? Are they going to get shocked by the price? I mean, I know a couple of them are talking to architects, as much as I know. Are the prices of the new place coming in anywhere in the range they thought of, or are they getting shackled?
Most of the people who are at that stage, who are buying $1 million piece of property or $2 million piece of property to put up a $2 or $3 million house, have a pretty good grasp of their finances, so they know. But it is, even if you have money, it's still a different scenario than it was a few years ago. Everything costs more. And what I do have is people who have lived in their house forever and it's been paid for, and then decide to either move, or when they find out the cost of downsizing is so expensive, they decide to stay and renovate where they're at, or if they're going to renovate and move anyway, the cost of materials, paint, drywall, things we've talked about before, let alone finding technicians and carpenters to do all these things, it's very difficult. So everything is just harder than it used to be.
Yeah, it sure seems that way. I mean, even the cost of remodeling. I mean, I do some remodeling at my place, but it's the idea. I mean, some of the costs you talk about where people are paying for like a new kitchen or bathroom, I'm like, really? I mean, it's up there, right? I mean, I don't know how you replace a whole. I mean, I know one of my my buddies he does a lot of remodeling and a lot of real estate stuff, and he told me, you only want to remodel expensive places. And I go, why is that exactly? He goes, because the drywall costs the same in $1 million apartment as it does in a $5,000 apartment. You can't afford, to remodel a less expensive place.
Yeah, your profit margin is so dramatically cut down. And when people used to say that, I put $150,000 kitchen in my house, well, that was something to dream of, and now $150,000 kitchen is not what it used to be. So that is a cautionary tale.
Well, you still get a stove at least for $150,000, I hope.
Yeah, you do. You might not, but however, that fancy new Viking or Corning stove or European stove that you're coveting might be about $70,000 or $80,000. So careful what you're going after here.
So I'm probably the only person that I know that would actually
get a lot of carry out for $70,000 or $80,000.
What our buddy? Our buddy Doc says, I spent $100,000 on the kitchen and my pizza bill is still the same.
That's right.
And I still cook out on the Weber as much as I ever did. What'd I pay $100,000 for? Nobody cooks.
Just in case.
Well, would you say the city, the different neighborhoods, some of them are hanging in there, even though it seems like they would be having trouble? Some of the Southwest Side neighborhoods are hanging in there, aren't they?
Yeah, I think at some point things are moving, because a lot of households were put on hold for formation during COVID too.
Yeah.
And then prior to that, a recession. So a lot of people, you can't live in the basement forever. So household formations are going on. Maybe not at the same economic, maybe not as nice as you thought you were going to get when you finally got out of the basement, but you got out of the basement, you got something. And again, so people are starting somewhere. It's going to keep going no matter where you live. Maybe not all at the same clip, but again, there's expanding population and we all have to live somewhere.
Yeah, right now, in your area, what's going on.
Illinois shrinking population, about that.
Okay. Well, they are. That was kind of my next question. The shrinking population in Chicago really hasn't affected a lot of the suburban areas, and maybe hasn't affected downtown all that much either. But the areas that are affected somehow or another, we got to get a solution for that. I don't know what the solution is, but it ends up like the city will have a downtown in the suburbs, and some of the rest of it is not so good. But yet, Southwest Side, Northwest Sides, they seem to be doing fine, right?
Everything is moving to a point. It's just what it is and for how much. Your entry point, what people could afford, is just less, so it chases people down to the lower level.
Well, what in the industry itself, I mean, you've been doing this a long time, so is Nancy. You guys are very good at what you do. I know Nancy's business is down a little bit, but if you ask her, she'll say the amount of people in the mortgage industry is drastically less. And have there been real estate brokers? Are there less brokers than there were 4 years ago? There has to be after the COVID mess.
You know, probably, but it's such a career that's in a state of flux because it's built on commission, and a lot of people don't understand how hard it is to live off the fruits of your labor, and how if a new person gets in and as soon as times gets hard, they panic and they leave. So it's a true test of who is a career person at this, whether you're a mortgage broker, real estate broker, whatever. You're in it for the long haul. You have your client base. You're going to build it and stay with it. It's not a career that you can't sustain ups and downs in your business.
Well, there used to be a whole bunch
except
of people.
Except for somebody who needs a paycheck every week. Let's put it that way.
Well, it used to be like a lot of people were part-time. Is that still the deal where the, you know,
there is no such thing as part-time in real estate if you want to make money. This is a job. Choice. That's when it's busy. I mean, I normally put in a full week, and when it's busy, any good real estate broker is probably working 40 to 70 hours a week when it's busy. It's just what you have to do.
Well, I mean, it used to be, I seem to recall a lot of people, be it husband or wife, where the other person had a really good job, and they were kind of real estate person where a friend down the block happened to list a house and dropped it in their lap, they did it. That was about it. I mean, they didn't really hustle and do anything else, not like you do. I mean, is it still that for a lot of people or no?
I think people say, I'm just going to do this part-time, and they realize that once you have a couple of clients and things don't go as planned as they do on TV, that things happen and you're just going to, you have to work.
Wait a minute, you mean stuff is not like on TV?
I wish it was.
I mean, you know, every person who's a bad guy doesn't get arrested in the end? I don't think so. Mm-hmm. Just saying. But how did we get from everybody was 3% and 4% down to having a 2008 fiasco, them blaming it on everybody who gotten 3% and 4% mortgages, and now they're back? How did that full circle happen? Didn't we blame the whole world on people got 3% mortgage, and now we're back to getting the same thing? And it's not causing trouble this time, it doesn't appear.
But I'm sorry, I'm watching somebody doing something strange in front of my house here. It's a different cycle. This is obviously much harder on the average person. You can't just double what you're going to pay for a house and expect people to be able to participate.
We're barely hearing you.
What?
You faded for a minute.
Okay. It's very difficult. You can't expect people to pay double. And the problem is it creates a bottleneck at a certain lower price range, or the people who are going to buy at the lower price range, and people are getting chased down to the lower price range. So then it creates the jam up at that price range, and everybody's fighting for that. So it's tougher on the lower to mid-range buyers than it is on the high-end buyers.
It seems like that's always the case.
It's always like that. It's the middle class getting squeezed again.
Dan Janitas was on 2 weeks ago talking about in Florida, the exodus there now, and the prices are catapulting down because of the increases in insurance prices that nobody can afford. He said somebody, what did he say? You weren't on, man. I think he said somebody was paying 500 insurance, now they want 5,000 or some number. And these condo places are just taking it and passing it out to a lot of these people retired. You know, okay, by the way, your condo fees are now, you know, $3,000 a month instead of $1,000 or something. Mm. And not that much. But all of a sudden the prices are down. That has not happened here. I won't say yet. That's not been a factor for our area so far, right, Rod?
Well, it's not happening because we don't have hurricanes. The big thing is, you know, the insurance companies are just not insuring the units. So if they're flat out not insuring them, let alone insuring them at an astronomical price, we're not going to do that. Thank God we don't have hurricanes. We have the occasional tornado sweeping through, but that's not the same thing as betting that 5 to 10 storms are going to decimate your state. So if you can't insure it and you're sitting in an expensive home or a condo unit, most people are going to try and get out, which of course makes the prices tumble. But we lived through something like this before. I think this happened in the 80s or so. So I don't know how they're going to get around it, how they're going to do that. You know, people are obviously still going to want to live in Florida. They're not going to want to be in Chicago in January, February, for sure. But they're going to have to figure out a way to keep people whole, and I don't know what that would be.
I don't know. But there has been a... Now, when you pass somebody... Some of the, like I said, some of the people you have are cash buyers. They sold a place and are buying another place, so it's not really an issue. But when Nance goes through a thing for somebody, and a lot of your people, because you guys work together, it's the total cost of the check every month, right? So it's the mortgage plus the insurance plus the taxes. And insurance is up a little bit, and the taxes are up maybe more than a little bit, depending on where you are. Is it starting to affect people's ability on the house? I mean, you talked about...
Absolutely. But it seems, actually, to your point, though, it affects people usually in condos or townhomes more because the maintenance fee is more prone to go up, whether they need to put a roof on or they've got higher insurance, whatever it is. A lot of times, people will find a place that they think is in their price range. By the time you take the taxes and your condo fees, sometimes the condo fees and... The taxes are the same as your monthly monthly mortgage fee, and that knocks a lot of people right out of the park.
Well, because those are people who want the 24-hour guy at the gate and all the other stuff. Those prices got to be going up huge.
That's good, but they're all going up because everything, the utilities and the maintenance, and a lot of the elevator buildings, well, you know, that all costs a fortune. So those, all the units that I've known, they've seen a pretty substantial jump in rates.
Well, you've mentioned before, and I'm not expecting you to name the spots on the map, that we just saw two in the last month. I don't know what was left of them when they closed, but traditional shopping centers close. What's the one out? Two of them out west? What the hell's the name of it? Stratford Mall?
What? Oh, Stratford Square, yeah.
But they close now. That usually leaves a pretty big hole in the village or town or whatever you want to call it they're in, right?
And
it happened in Evergreen Park. Well, I mean, you've come across, was it Lincoln Mall closed and is it Flossmoor and a couple of places out there? You've identified some places where housing prices have had a drop because the taxes are so high, where people's tax payment is as much as their mortgage.
Yeah, and the revenue if revenue's disappeared, obviously it's going to come from somewhere and going to come from the residents instead of a business then.
But how do those places come back?
Or your services suffer if you're in a site, you know, where they don't have enough money to patch the roads or, you know, keep up with the street lights or whatever, you know, then everything degrades.
Well, as a matter of fact, I remember driving you out to a couple of places like the Park Forest or Chicago Heights or someplace, and these are areas that they're not near as attractive as they were 40, 50 years ago. But people are trying to come back and remodel in places and so forth, and, you know, I think there's hope for them. Yet, you showed me a few places where houses are going for $60,000 and the taxes are like $500 a month. How the hell does that work?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing that nobody's ever come up with a decent answer, is that where there is a decent housing stock at low cost, the taxes are so high. So high. I had a little old lady who was just looking for a small house for herself, and every time we found a great house, the taxes would, you know, be exorbitant. We found a beautiful two flat with a basement in great shape. It was $75,000, but the taxes were $14,000.
Yeah, I don't know how you even come across doing that. I mean,
what does the city have to work with? But I think the state, who has their nose in a lot of things that I don't think it belongs in, should start examining the tax rolls of some of these smaller suburbs and see how they could help them work things out here. You know, maybe the state could take a smaller chunk and help these suburbs keep, you know, there's you know, great shopping districts now, and these are suburbs that have beautiful housing stock, but you have to help some people get a foothold somewhere. And by chasing out investors and residents, you know, you just exacerbate the problem.
Well, yeah, and I think some of it has to do with the percentage that the state pays for kids going to school should maybe be a little higher. But now it's virtually, is it like 80% local audit or 90? I mean, it's pretty high, right, local?
Too much of mine, that's all I can say.
Yeah, and well, then people vote for, I mean, you know, I grew up
almost in half of my taxes go towards school in my district.
Well, I grew up in, well, later in my grow-up years, I grew up in Evergreen Park, and I know my mom, used to be a lot of older people that always, whenever they came up with the vote for, you know, to raise taxes for the school, the older people always voted it down. So the school was fine. The athletic facilities weren't, you know, maybe top drawer, but they were there. Well, now I think they've won like two referendums in a row, right? Because they're my brothers yesterday, and he lives in Evergreen Park, and they're redoing the football field like again for like the third time. I mean, there's nothing but money. I mean, everybody, you know, I guess you have to have all these athletic fields and so forth and, you know, to sort of compete, but wow. I mean, it's not education. I don't know that you need 15 different fields for all these people when other people are paying for it. I mean, it's nice, I guess, but I mean, now Evergreen Park, a perfect example, when we grew up there, taxes in Evergreen Park were less than Chicago. And we knew this because the street we lived on, the other side of the street was Chicago, we were Evergreen Park. Well, then Evergreen Plaza went under, right, Odd? And now all of a sudden the taxes in Evergreen Park are way more than Chicago, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. But to your point, you have to ask why, because look what took, you know, other businesses have taken their place. So it's not like it ever gets passed back, though, either.
Well, there was a thing on news radio. We got a dash here, Odd, but there was a news thing on, you know, News Radio 78 has some good stuff, so I'll give them kudos. They had a lady on there they were interviewing regarding how high property taxes are. And she said, well, for a large extent, you can only look in the mirror and blame yourself. And I'm sitting there going, okay, where's this one going? And she said, well, in the last, these referendums to raise taxes, they always spring it on people at like some election where it's going to be, you know, 15% of the people are going to show up. And they eventually keep doing it till the thing passes. So if you, I mean, when I say they, she's collectively, all the, you know, this is the trick a lot of the municipalities and use. And she said, so most places, if you say the taxes are too high, they will point to two or three referendums that you voted for.
Well, as I always say, you get the government you deserve. You can't drag your butt down to vote.
Well, yeah, and but I mean, you look at a lot of stuff can get jammed through now when nobody shows up, right? I mean, and now the more convenient they make it for people to vote, the less people vote. I don't know what the story is with that, but
we should go back to having a election on Saturday or Sunday or both, and if you can't get your butt there to vote, unless you're a military person or disabled, then you don't vote.
Mm. You're talking about the French model.
I'm talking about something that we don't need mail-in ballots, but that's a story for another day.
Story for another day. All right, take care of yourself. Thank you for calling in. Give us a shameless plug. How does somebody find you?
You can send me an email at AudreyJohnson@realtor.com or give me a phone call at 708-846-6494.
One more shameless plug before we go, Matt. Our buddy Greg Pappas has been working on this website for a long time, and it has to do with a lot of the stuff that's going on in the industry. And I keep talking to as much as I can. I'm not wishing to market down. I'm not a doggy downer. I'm not everything. I've just been around enough to know that whatever's going on, it changes. Changes in 81, 82. For a long time, all the strategies were, the market never moved. What can we do to make money when the market never moves? And there's all kinds of strategies involving options or stocks or whatever. But now, nobody even wants to hear about maybe this go up every year market is going to end.
Yeah.
Well, in my mind, Matt, it already has ended. The continual progression, not today or tomorrow or next week or next year, but your interest rates are going up and not down, which is a totally different environment than we've been in since 1982, for God's sake. Actually, 1981. So my message is to learn more about alternative markets and how you can still prosper, how to protect yourself, how maybe to make money in a flat or down market, and maybe get yourself a broker or brokerage firm that, if you ever need him or her, is there to answer a few questions. I mean, somebody like maybe us at PTI.
Like PTI.
Yeah, like PTI. And also, if the market were to crater, and I'm not hoping for it, I'm not predicting it, if it were, you know, Audrey's, by the way, Audrey's still a rep here at PTI, on this current and all her stuff. If somebody wants to open up an account now, what do you used to take, an hour and a half? Now it's like 4 or 5 days. So if all of a sudden...
Everything's a project, yeah, the regulation.
Everything's a project.
On everything.
We got to inspect you through Interpol and every other damn place you can find.
And the website is immediate trade. Yeah, it's immediate trade. Yeah.
So it's to the point now where it's done. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to get Greg an email address at Stocks and Jocks this week. And what Greg is looking for is 5 or 10 people who are willing to start using the site for free. Mm. And it's not about, and having to do, what it is it's not about investment advice. It's not about anything like that. It's designed so if you decide, okay, I want to get long IBM or something, or pick a stock, or short, how can I get long IBM using the traditional option strategies? I want to get long. And what it'll do is it'll suggest some strategies and give you the break-evens and those kinds of things. It's not going to tell you what to do. It's not going to suggest anything. And it's going to tell you, by the way, call your broker, because then at least you have more of a knowledge base for it. Mm. But what he's looking for, the site is, he thinks, done. He's looking for 5 or 10 people to start using it a couple of times a day just to make sure that the site can handle the volume. Mm. You don't have to talk about there more than Matt. Yeah. More than Matt.
So he's trying to do some research.
Well, he's trying to make sure that they can handle the traffic. Because if it turns out, you know, if 10 people query the thing, you know, 10 times a day,
yeah,
is it going to work okay? So if anybody wants to do that, I would say call in or tweet in, and Matt Byrne will handle it.
Definitely.
But then we're probably going to get you a spot too at Stocks and Jocks, Matt. So why not?
Yeah.
So I mean, those two guys will be able to handle it, because it's not coming from PTI. But the idea would be, if you like it and you see other strategies and you think maybe you might need them in your future, maybe you need to talk to somebody about it, and we would accept a few more clients, not a million, but a few. And you know, Aud, what do you think? I mean, it's about time people start to, you know, look at alternative things. Doesn't help to study in advance, does it? It doesn't hurt.
Well, it always helps people to be exposed to more ideas.
But the last thing I want is to have something really bad happen to the market, and all of a sudden 15 people call up for help, and my message is going to be, I can't help you. And I don't want to do that, right? That happened last time in 2008,
well,
remember?
It's the old thing is, would you buy a Mercedes and not insure it before you took it out of the showroom?
Well, it's not if you think it's, no, I wouldn't. Yeah. Although we know people that have dropped down from Mercedes and are driving BMWs now. I never thought I'd see that.
Oh, I'm telling them what you said.
Oh, God. SP futures, futures up 12, NASDAQ futures up 70. You know, I've driven a few BMWs in my time. I never liked them. Mm. What, is it because I couldn't fit in them on, or what? Didn't Dr. J had the two-seater, and then he had the first little SUV, didn't he? Was it a Mark V or something? That thing wasn't very nice. Anyway, maybe because I couldn't fit in it, I don't know. Anyway, SUV is down 12, NASDAQ is down 6, up 12, NASDAQ up 6. Thanks, Matt. Sorry about all the flooding. Oh, you wouldn't believe the flooding this morning on expressways. Mm-hmm. Hubbard's Cave.
It's rained out here a lot, too, so, yeah, I do believe it.
Hubbard's Cave, two lanes over.
We're in the lake today.
Yeah, we were in the lake today. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Well, y'all be careful out there.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit hamzyanalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.
We hear very little, and we understand even less.